Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on milk, real milk, when we come back. You know, the average American household making between $22,000 and $30,000 a year spends about 16% or about $5,000 of its income on food. Now, if that household is making between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, they'll spend about 10% or about $6,000 on food. 12% of American households purchase organic produce, and they buy those products from health food stores, organic produce salesmen, and farmers markets. Now, that translates into some 34 million people coast to coast and border to border. And already there are more than 4,000 small organic farms producing organic fruits and vegetables and meats on 25 acres or less. And they're making at least $100,000 a year serving this growing specialty market. Some of these farms are as small as 3 acres. And they're in every state in the union. You know, old Henry Kaiser summed it up nicely when he said of his business success, he said, find a need and fill it. And here's a need just waiting to be filled. Now, the law school has a program to teach you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. And this is a 5-day school and includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and the law that's governing them. Why don't you call today and order our free 4-hour CD package. Remember, that CD package is entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. That's the place to start. To order yours, just call today, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the article in Acres USA called Real Milk. As an adjunct to that, a fellow by the name of William Campbell Douglas, M.D., Bill Douglas, medical doctor, wrote a book called The Milk of Human Kindness. The milk of human kindness, he says, is not pasteurized. In his chapter 2, called Objections and Utter Objections, there are 28 objections that have been voiced by advocates of raw milk against the pasteurization of milk. When we broke off last time, we were talking about the acceptance of the American consumer of this adulterated product called pasteurized milk. How could consumers have overlooked these 28 objections and have accepted milk that has less than 3.5% butterfat, pasteurized, homogenized, contains additives, it's non-organic, it contains BGH, feedlot fed, chemical fertilizer fed, they're fed bypass protein, they have or may have mad cow disease, they have additives added, contains estrogen, hormones, antibiotics, GMOs, and neurotoxic pesticides, and people have accepted that product as milk and that it's good for them. That's a surprise. But then, you know, I'm not here to tell these people they're all wrong and made a mistake, and I'm here to save you because you people have been bamboozled. I'm satisfied that if that's what the majority of Americans want to buy, let them buy it. I'll tell you what my objection is, and why I voiced my objection is because I want to buy real milk. I want to buy milk with butterfat that has 4% plus. I'm willing to pay $4 to $12 a gallon for it. I want it non-pasteurized, non-homogenized. I don't want any additives. I want organic. I don't want any BGH. I want them grass-fed. I don't want any chemical fertilizers. I don't want any bypass protein. I don't want any mad cow disease. I don't want any vitamin D added. I don't want any estrogen, hormones, antibiotics, or GMO feed put in there. And I don't want it with neurotoxic pesticides. And the monopolists who are in control of the legislatures and in control of America's dairy industry, the Mid-America dairymen, the dairymen themselves, they've taken it upon themselves to protect me, like George Bush, the president. He wants to protect George Gordon. He says, it's my duty to protect the American people. That's why I had to take your civil liberties from you, Gordon, to protect you from the terrorists. I don't have any problem with the terrorists. I'm not complaining. And I don't have any problem with a real milk, raw, unpasteurized milk. But the monopolists want to protect me. And so I've been saying, would you please stop protecting me and let me be responsible for my own dumb actions? Let me go ahead and drink this raw milk and let's see what it does to me. I figured if it was good enough for Moses, it's probably good enough for me. And I came to the conclusion that God probably didn't make a mistake when he made real milk. Real milk, that's the unpasteurized stuff. I figured that if God needed that milk pasteurized, he would have figured out a way to pasteurize it right inside the cow. That if in fact he thought that milk needed to be homogenized, he would have homogenized it right in the cow. After all, that's what he did with goat's milk. I don't think that I need to correct God's mistakes. Now, the Mid-America dairymen think they do. The legislatures all believe God made a mistake that needs to be fixed. So I'm in a minority. And Campbell Douglas is in a minority. And he says the state of Massachusetts back in 1908, recognizing that pasteurized milk was no longer a vital food, passed a law that required milk subjected to heating to be labeled heated milk, in 1-inch black letters against a white background. My God, if the legislature of Massachusetts would do that today, require that Kraft Foods and Nabisco and R.J. Reynolds put big letters across the package that says, this package contains genetically modified organisms. You know, you'd be doing me a big favor. I would thank you for doing that. Have you ever noticed that when it comes to labeling the packages as GMO, they're silent, but they just can't wait to come out here and protect you from raw milk? Notice that? You know, we're getting down to where hypocrisy is getting to be embarrassing, isn't it? By about 1950, raw certified milk became essentially non-existent in this country, except in three states. And the public was thoroughly convinced through massive advertising over the years that their original suspicions about pasteurized milk were unfounded, and that the pasteurization process was protecting them from rampant disease conditions. And Holland Trout, in their book, eulogized pasteurization of milk has attained a near perfection within a half a century. And perhaps the greatest achievement lies in the acclaim of people of many nations for pasteurized household milk. And although Hall and Trout are extremely laudatory and wild, in fact, they are wildly enthusiastic about the merits of the pasteurization of milk. And they make the same interesting comments when comparing and keeping quality of the two types of milk. They say, quote, the influence on the keeping quality after pasteurization is often exaggerated. The chief organisms responsible for spoilage of pasteurized milk originate from pasteurization contamination, unquote. Then they go on to quote other authors who concluded that the number of bacteria found in the milk gave absolutely no indication of how well pasteurized milk would keep. And as mentioned, the bacteria responsible for spoilage later are not the same ones found in raw milk. The authors state apologetically, the effect of heat for minimum pasteurization intensity has generally little significance except, of course, in the destruction of certain bacteria and enzymes. These certain bacteria and enzymes are absolutely vital to the production of nutritious and safe milk. They then go on to admit, because of the complexity of milk fat, that we don't really know how much change takes place due to the pasteurization process. And they go on to say milk fat may be involved in many of the unknown effects of heat. Data bearing on the speculative effects of heat on the fat itself are scarcely existent. The protein casein is also affected by pasteurization. The effects of this on the human body are totally unknown. They also report that the chief serum proteins of milk, lactalbumin and lactoglobulin, are both adversely affected by high heat treatment of milk, and although the authors admit to the deficiencies of certain vitamins and minerals found in pasteurized milk, they turn to other authorities to reassure us that the changes are negligible. And they quote Kay and others that say the original suggestion that the pasteurization seriously diminished the nutritive value of milk has been proved conclusively to be ill-founded. Enzymes are still little understood as far as their contribution to human nutrition is concerned, but undoubtedly they play an important part. The authors make little of enzymes and report that a large number of enzymes are completely destroyed in the process of pasteurization. They attribute very little importance to this and point out that the complete destruction of the enzyme phosphatase is one method of testing to see if the milk has been adequately pasteurized. Phosphatase, or tase, is essential for the absorption of calcium, but the complete destruction of phosphatase is the aim of pasteurization. I got to pause here. I can't contain myself anymore. Listen to what they're admitting to. Remember, they tell you when you're buying milk, they say, this milk is full of calcium. They're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. Boys and girls, the milk is just full of calcium. God, it's wonderful stuff, full of calcium. But in order for you to digest and to absorb the calcium in the milk, you have to have this enzyme, which is called PHOSPHATASE, phosphatase or phosphatase. And so when we measure the milk to see how effective the pasteurization is, we measure the phosphatase, and we find that there's no phosphatase in the milk, then we know that it's been pasteurized correctly. It's been pasteurized completely. But when you've destroyed that enzyme, you cannot assimilate or absorb any of the calcium that's in the milk. Which, by the way, was the purpose for buying this milk now, wasn't it? You see where reason, logic, and common sense just disappears when we're talking about business and multinational corporations? Now, when God created this milk over here, He made a perfect food. If you raise calves, and you put one on a bucket ration that comes from Purina and one on the cow out here, and just watch those calves grow, and in 6 months' time, you compare the two of them, the cow calf pair will be twice the size. That calf off that cow will be twice the size of that runt grown on Purina calf chow or whatever they call it. And you'll have a sick calf all the time when you're feeding them on that ration. Now, I've mentioned this before. Let me mention it again. 1918, 60% of Americans were healthy, 40% had some disease. They had some ailment. They had some complaint. They had a symptom. Today it's 99% have symptoms, only 1% are symptom free. This is the same 20th century period from 1900 to 2000 where you see the degeneration of our health at the same time we see the pasteurization of milk. Can anybody connect the dots? Now, I'm not suggesting that pasteurized milk is the sole problem, but 90% of the food that we eat in America in 2006 is processed. 90%. Now, when you've got the disease rate that goes from 60 in 1918 to 99%, then you've got processed foods, which at the turn of the century were probably near nothing or 10%, and now it's up to 90%. Can you connect those dots, children? And get this, I'm not telling you to change your diet. I don't care what you eat. I'm a reporter. I just come on the air and I tell you, well, these are the facts. Now, what you do with those facts is your business and life, but you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out now, do you? Of course, if you've been handicapped by college or something, you know, you might need some professional advice or some professional help, but most of us ordinary people down here at the blue-collar level, you know, we can figure that out. You know, a plumber knows that water runs downhill and payday is on Friday. Don't take him very long to figure out that this pasteurization, these 28 complaints, 28 questions over here, when we compare this real milk to the store milk over here, it starts to tell us a story. And the story is that the monopolists have an end game over here. They've got a reason for selling pasteurized milk. I don't blame them. Makes all the sense in the world. Think about it. I'm an old-timey dairyman. It takes a lot of time, effort, and energy to produce clean milk. So if I'm going to produce clean milk, I got to work real hard. But if I'm going to pasteurize the milk, I can produce dirty milk, filter the stuff, send it into the creamery, they're going to pasteurize it and kill all the bacteria in it. Hey, I'm home free. Now, the fact that this pasteurized milk causes a lot of disease problems, and then a corollary factor problem comes along here, not only do you get disease from the pasteurized milk, but it's cheaper and easier to produce. I can sell dirty milk to you. All I got to do is pasteurize it. It's a lot easier for me to pasteurize the milk than it is to produce it clean. I mean, I got to wash the cow's bag to produce clean milk. Now, when we're talking about disease over here, if I feed my cow BH or BGH and she gets mastitis and I shoot her up with penicillin, now, that penicillin and that BGH, estrogen, and other hormones that we stick in that milk is probably not good for you. We don't know how bad it is for you, but, you know, just our common sense would tell us, well, you know, we really don't know what that estrogen and all these enzymes are doing to you people out there, but we really don't care because it makes the cows give more milk. And we're not getting paid for healthy, nutritious milk. We're getting paid for gallons of milk. Gallons. I get so much a gallon. I don't get paid anymore because this milk is clean. Now, of course, we get real cleanly. We've got these stainless steel tanks and glass pipelines, and we make a big, big production over the clean milk. Kids, it's not the fly specks and the cow manure in the milk that's causing you a problem. It's the antibiotics that you can't see. It's the chemical compounds of the genetically modified organisms. It's the neurotoxic pesticides. It's the estrogen and hormones. That's what's causing you the bad health. Now, I don't deny that I would like to get paid, and I would like to make my money off of producing good, wholesome, clean milk for you people out there. That's why I do what I do. Now remember that the dairyman out there, he gets paid for volume, not quality. And I get paid for quality, not volume. And that's why I've got to get paid $4 to $12 a gallon, and my competitor on the commercial side gets paid $1 or $2. About $1.50. I don't think anybody gets $2 a gallon, but they might get as high as $1.50 a gallon for producing that commercial chalk called store milk. Now, the chemistry of calcium in human nutrition is much better understood today than when the phosphatase test was introduced. The decalcification of milk which is fed to children may be a major cause of osteoporosis. This osteoporosis occurs later in life. We now know that low calcium absorption in healthy women may cause a loss of spinal bone mass as early as age 20. Such women may lose 50% or more of their bone mass by the age of 70. Other factors which contribute to this literal dissolving of the skeletal tissue are the high phosphates in cola drinks and many food diets, such as the Scarsdale diet, which is notoriously low in calcium. The high protein diets also accelerate calcium excretion. When you add other calcium wasting problems, such as vitamin D and C deficiency, alcoholism, antacids, anticoagulants, anticonvulsants, barbiturates, cortisone, diuretics, and smoking, it's no wonder grandma is falling on her face from a fractured hip. The enzyme lapse is also totally destroyed by the pasteurization process. Now I say lapse, it's L-A-P-A-S-E, lapase acids or aids in the digestion of fats. Homogenization, the pulverizing of the milk fat, causes more lapase to be released into the milk. So Hall and Trout tell us the complete destruction of lapase is imperative, otherwise the milk becomes rancid. No lipase for fat digestion, no phosphatase for calcium absorption, no galactase for milk sugar digestion, no catalase, diastase, or peroxidase, but the authors conclude the healthfulness of people enjoying high per capita consumption of pasteurized milk attests to the maintenance of its nutritive value. All right, now here are the champions of the pasteurized milk, and they write a book and they say, okay, when we pasteurize it, we take out these vital enzymes. We don't know what the answer to this is. We don't know what it's causing over here, but we're going to assure you that it's minimal and you should go ahead and drink it anyway. These people get paid for writing books by the dairy industry. Let me tell you how this game is played. The John Deere people, they were classics at this. And some guy comes in here and he says, well, let's make a machine that chops grass so that you can feed this grass in bunkers to cows that are on a feedlot. So they go out into the field and they chop. Now they have to have some company that can make this machinery. So they go to John Deere and they say, can you make the machinery? John Deere makes the machinery. And they take it to the University of California at Davis, and they have a professor out there, and some students test this stuff, and they test it, and how many pounds of grass per acre do we get, and how much vitamins and minerals does it have, and we haul this stuff in, and how much gasoline does it use, and how much fuel, and how much maintenance, and all this, and they come to a conclusion. When they get through writing the report, this is the greatest thing since sliced white bread, and it just makes money hand over fist. John Deere makes this, and they go out with their salesmen, sell this to the farmers. And the farmers go out, and they chop feed and feed their cattle on the dry lots. And the dry lots then have all this manure, and they got to pick it up and haul it back down into the fields. Now, you see, a cow goes down in the field, eats the grass, poops on the grass, walks back up to the barn. You take the milk out of her. She goes back down. She eats the grass, poops on the grass. She comes back up. You see, it's all done automatically until you start entering mechanization, and we start improving upon God's plan. So in order to improve upon this plan, we want to be making money at the same time. So people write books, college professors write books, papers, and treatises about the wonders of John Deere field choppers and self-emptying trailers, self-unloading trailers. This in turn inspires John Deere to give $2 or $3 million grants to the university. Now, if you think that the university professor is going to write up a report that is negative after he's just received a $2 or $3 million grant, you know, you're not in touch with reality. So what in effect is going on here? John Deere is bribing college professors to write reports that are favorable for their machinery and equipment so that they can go sell it to the farmers. Now, the farmers use this stuff, and we actually go out and we demonstrate that this loses money. I used to be in that business, and I can tell you we didn't make any money at it, and we discontinued the process. But we read the literature. The literature said it was good. We believed it. In the same way that we believe the literature that tells us that pet canned milk for your infant baby is better than your breast milk. We honest to God in America believe that. Now, for you people that are living in other places in the world, you're probably shaking your head saying, well, that can't be true. Let me tell you again. Here in America, we honest to God believe that Kraft Foods Borden and pet milk from Carnation is a better food for your baby than a mother's breast milk. We believe it as gospel in this country. Now, it's not true, never has been. Taint now, never will be. But it's more convenient. And what we're really saying, you know, America's mothers are really saying, I don't want to be bothered with that breastfeeding. I want to wean that kid as soon as possible, stick him on a bottle so I can send him over to daycare so I can get on with my career at the corporation as I'm climbing the corporate ladder. That's what American mothers really want in life. They don't want to raise babies and children. They want to drive Caterpillar tractors and work as linemen on the public utility poles. Hall and Trout tell us that the vitamin C content of milk can play an important role in human nutrition. They're referring to pasteurized milk, and they claim that a quart of pasteurized milk contains 16 milligrams of vitamin C, one-fourth of the official requirement. However, something they did not know at the time was the effect that fluorescent light has on milk. You see, milk in almost all grocery stores is placed in open bins with fluorescent lighting. Fluorescent lights in the milk cooler. This fluorescent lighting has been shown to destroy half of the vitamin C content of the milk. This loss, along with the pasteurization loss, does not make pasteurized milk a good source of vitamin C. So in the late 1930s, the system of clarification was added to the milk processing business. The clarifier. You know what that is? The clarifier. Is used basically to clean up debris, that is manure, pus, and other foreign material that is in the milk as a result of sloppy manufacturing methods. Now let me explain this to you, boys and girls, from the perspective of an old-timey dairyman. You bring a cow into the barn, and your cow lets loose on the floor with a pile of manure. She's uppity today. She kicks the milking machines off into the manure that's right behind her. And there's 14.5 pounds of vacuum in this suction cup mechanism, which goes and sucks up a goodly portion of manure. Now, in this milking parlor, there are six cows. And there's a pipeline up here. Five of these cows are milking into the milk pipeline, and in your cow kicked the milking machines off. Now we gotta clean these milking machines up, but meanwhile some manure went into the pipeline, didn't it? Okay. So we shut the valve off. Now, boys and girls, you'd think now that we're gonna rush into the milk house, turn off the pipeline, collect that milk that has now been contaminated by cow feces, and we're going to dump this out of the milk tank. Now, your milk tank, the entrance tank from the pipeline, is probably a 5, maybe a 10-gallon tank, which is about half to three-quarters full most of the milking time. Then we're going to break down the pipeline, and we're going to stop the milking process and take a half an hour out of our schedule, and we're going to clean up this mess. Now, that's what you would think we're going to do. And if you think that's what we're going to do, you know, you boys and girls, you don't understand the real world here. See, that's why we have filters. Now, you see, what we do is we run in here, and we change the filter about three times in a row because it plugs up. This manure, as it comes through the pipeline, comes into a long sheet that's about 3 or 4 feet long. A long sheet of gauze or Kindle milk filter material, and it plugs that up. So we simply shut off the valve, throw that dirty one out, put a clean one in, put another one in, until we filter the manure out. Now, this manure isn't made up just wholly of little particles of ground up grass. It's made up of liquid, and that liquid has bacteria in it. And some of that bacteria is called E. coli, 157H7, a very deadly, toxic bacteria. Now, in the old days, we used to do another thing when we had an accident like that occur, which occurs about once every milking. Not necessarily every milking, but, you know, three or four times a week. What we do is we take one or two syringes of penicillin and just shoot it right into the bulk milk tank to kill the bacteria. Oh, sure, that adds a lot of antibiotic to the milk, but what the heck? I mean, it's 1,000 gallons of milk, and what do you got in there? 2 ounces of penicillin? I mean, you know, it's minuscule, you know, from our perspective, but it cleans up the milk so that when it goes into the creamery, we don't have a high bacteria count. We got to control that bacteria count. I just wanted to tell you, you know, that's the way that game is played. So that you know that that we dairymen out here are on top of, we produce a dirty product which needs clarification. So here's Dr. Campbell. He's going to explain this clarification. In the late 30s, the system of clarification was added to the milk processing business. The clarifier is used basically to clean up debris, manure, pus, and other foreign material that's in the milk as a result of sloppy manufacturing methods. Hall and Trout state that the centrifugal clarification of milk was early frowned upon by officials who suspected the process would be used to clean up dirty milk. But they say research showed that clarification was necessary to prevent the sedimentation found even in aseptically produced milk, which was the result of settling out of leukocytes in milk, which had been homogenized. Now, the average reader would not know what leukocytes are. So we're going to tell you. It's pus. P-U-S. That's right. Just plain pus. With the onset of homogenization, the very undesirable situation had developed. The leukocytes, pus, were noted to settle to the bottom of the bottle and make a grayish oil-like sludge. Now, one cannot sell milk with a pus layer on the bottom, and as almost all milk is now homogenized, something had to be done to get this pus out. So the clarification process was instituted. The sediment removed by the clarification process is called in the milk trade slime, and that's exactly what it is. Slime. Now, again, boys and girls, I wanted to let you know from old George here, an old-timey dairyman, been around for a long time. We produce a bad, dirty product. And then we sell that to the public, knowing full well that that product is going to be pasteurized, and it's going to be clarified, and it's going to be cleaned up. And it's a hell of a lot cheaper to clean up dirty milk than it is to produce clean milk. Now, I have to produce clean milk because we're not going to clarify it, we're not going to pasteurize it, we're not going to homogenize it, we're not going to add anything to it. So when you buy my milk and you take it home, and you find that there's sediment in the bottom of the jar or the bottle, and or you find the clarification is needed and it's not there and there's pus in the milk, you're not going to come back and buy from me now, are you? That's why I contend that the consumer who buys one bad bottle of milk is going to be the best judge of the cleanliness of the milk. And it doesn't take him very long to figure that out. But we've hired paid professionals to hide the dirt and the filth and to kill the bacteria by pasteurization. That's what we've done. And that's another reason why I don't want to buy pasteurized milk. Pasteurized milk is dirty. Otherwise, we wouldn't need to pasteurize it. If the milk was clean to start with, why do you need to pasteurize it? Is it because God made a mistake and the cow was full of bacteria and therefore we have to pasteurize it to get rid of the bad bacteria? If that's the case, then how come all the calves don't die? Oh no, boys and girls, God didn't make a mistake. He made a good product. That's why it was called milk, is nature's perfect food. And then any of you women out there that think that Kraft or Infamil or Pat or Carnation or somebody else can make better milk or a better formula than God did with mother's breast milk, you're out of touch with reality. You've been to college. To believe that kind of lie, you'd have to have gone to college. Okay, we're at the halfway point here, boys and girls. I've got to give you a reminder, and that reminder is that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and for more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not totally endorsed all of the time, in every circumstance, by the Law Hour or editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing a book here called The Milk of Human Kindness in conjunction with Real Milk. The book is written by William Campbell Douglas, and I think if you called Acres USA, they'd probably have that book in their collection. I just saw their 2006 book catalog. There's 500 titles in there that deal with subjects just like this. If there's anything about ecologic agriculture or about GMOs or farming or Rodale books or anything of that nature, you'll find it in the Acres USA catalog. It's probably the number one source of information for organics in America. Now, they may not be number one. They may only be number two, and Rodale may be number one. Whether it's Rodale or Acres, I'm not quite sure. Both of them are good institutions. I'm not recommending one over the other. I'm just suggesting to you that you call Acres. They've got a phone number. It's 512-892-4400. 512-892-4400. You could mention my name while you're down there. I don't think that they're real mad at me. Sometimes I got to tell people, my God, whatever you do, don't mention my name. Don't mention my name. Because they hate me. But I don't think that that's quite the case down there. But you can see here, when I do a report, can you imagine what the American Dairy Association must be thinking right now listening to this report? And I'm one of their insiders. I mean, I'm one of their old-timey milkers. I started milking cows when I was 15 years old for old Frank Rocha. He put me to work dumping milk first in cans, and then I worked my way up milking cows, and I've been milking cows for years and years. I'm pretty familiar with the process. Now, we could produce clean milk, and if we got paid for the quality of our milk, instead of the volume of our milk, we would produce a lot better product. And that's where the people who produce raw milk are coming from. See, the guy producing raw milk, he gets paid. He can spend the time, effort, and energy to produce a good, clean product because he's getting somewhere between, you know, $4 and $12 a gallon for it. And he gets paid for producing a clean, wholesome, organic product. That's the objective, and that's what he's getting paid for, and that's why he gets paid so much for it. The commercial dairy farmer, he gets paid for volume. He gets paid for gallons in the tank. He's not real concerned about the quality of the gallons that are in the tank. And that's why I reported to you that in all my years, I'm an old man, and I'm telling you right now, and if there's any exceptions out there, and in all of my lifetime of milking cows and being in the dairy business and around cattle all my life, only had one lady. She wrote me an email some, I don't know, year two, 3 years ago. She said, "We drink the milk out of our bulk tank." And I thought to myself, now either that lady doesn't know what's in that bulk tank, or she doesn't produce that milk, you know, she's a housewife up here, or else that family farm actually produces clean milk. Now I'm not saying that you can't produce clean milk, and that there's probably some dairies out there that produce clean milk, and you could drink the milk out of the tank. I'm not opposed to drinking milk out of the tank. I just haven't seen any dairies that produce clean milk that went in a tank. Or went into the tank. See, my milk goes into a bucket. I bring it in the house and I strain it and I put it in jars. I don't have a big operation, but, you know, if I had 30 cows or 50 and I was milking, I might milk and put them in a tank. And I might drink out of my tank, but I want to report to you, as I just did before the break, boys and girls, pasteurization was developed expressly to clean up dirty milk. And the point that these authors are making is that why don't we concentrate, why doesn't our government concentrate on producing clean milk? It's going to cost us more money. Let's produce clean milk. It's a wild new concept. But the milk that's being pasteurized that you're drinking today isn't clean. It contains GMOs, neurotoxic pesticides, antibiotics, hormones, estrogen, bypass protein. It's non-organic. It's got many additives in it. That's what's wrong with store milk. That's why I don't want it. Now, in one investigation detailing the heat treatment of milk, it was revealed that not just one simple heating takes place. Milk is heated over and over again with each process. In clarification, the milk may be heated to 135 degrees Fahrenheit. In the filtering process, the milk is heated again to about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. In the bactofugation process method of removing bacteria, the milk is again heated to 170 degrees Fahrenheit. With deaeration, a vacuum treatment is used in which the milk is treated in two vacuum chambers, the first at 175 degrees Fahrenheit, the second at 100 degrees Fahrenheit. To 152, it's 100 to 152. These heats may vary according to the systems used, but the milk is heated over and over again. It's hard to imagine this milk resembling the original product after all of this steam cleaning. And in the old days, doctors and scientists had a clear understanding of the milk problem. It's peculiar how old truths have to be rediscovered. In 1926, an ordinance was proposed in Missouri that would have prohibited the sale of raw milk. 1926, a judge in the case said that a great volume of evidence was offered regarding the relative qualities of raw milk and pasteurized milk. A large number of practicing physicians, chemists, bacteriologists, and users of milk were sworn. The evidence conclusively shows that pasteurization altered the character of the milk, and the testimony of far the greater number of physicians and bacteriologists who testified was that pasteurization impairs its quality, that it destroys some of the vitamins in the milk and impairs others, that it destroys the lactic acid which causes milk to sour, that souring is a process of self-preservation, and lactic acid is an important element in counteracting pernicious bacteria, that pasteurization disintegrates the salts, such as calcium, iron, and phosphates, causes them to lose their organic quality, and makes them more difficult, if not impossible, to assimilate. Pasteurization caused constipation and indigestion, particularly among babies and children, that it breaks down the enzymes, though other physicians said that there was sufficient of that element in the digestive organisms of persons who drink milk. It was shown that doctors generally require raw milk for ailing babies and children, that children who could not flourish on pasteurized milk usually improved in health and flourished very well on raw milk. There was other evidence to show that one reason for the satisfactory healthfulness of raw milk is that it increases the vitality and the resistance of a child because it is easier to assimilate and digest, and that the destruction of the pathogenic germs by pasteurization was more than counterbalanced by the superior quality of raw milk. Now, that's a judge's opinion in a case tried in 1926. In his report, it's called Conclusions of Law, Findings of Fact and Conclusions of Law. So in his findings of fact, he listed these findings of fact. He says, here's what came out in the testimony. My conclusion would be that anybody who studied or looked into in any depth, not just superficially, but, you know, with a little bit of thought involved in this question of pasteurized versus raw milk, it won't take you very long to come to a conclusion. In addition to the professional evidence offered, the relators offered the testimony of a number of mothers and other raisers of children, and they uniformly testified that children who were not healthful when fed on pasteurized milk were healthful when fed raw milk. The respondents made no attempt to counteract the testimony, but countenance it was unimportant coming from non-professional sources. But it was the opinion of several physicians that actual experience, particularly clinical experience, was more valuable than laboratory tests in determining the effects of milk upon the system. So the court decided that the ordinance prohibiting the sale of raw milk was in conflict with the law that should be invalidated. A letter written to the Journal of the American Veterinarian Medical Association by Dr. Edward T. Henry, a doctor of veterinary medicine, contained the usual arguments that pasteurized, homogenized milk is just as nutritious, it is just as fresh as raw milk. And Dr. Henry says, let me lay to rest the myth that pasteurization lowers nutrition of milk. True, several enzymes and maybe a vitamin or two are destroyed, but one should not be relying totally on milk for those constituents in the first place. Pasteurization has very little, if any, effect on the nutritional value of dairy products. Unquote. Now listen, kids. Let me put an arrow right there. Have you ever seen these ads that say, 9 doctors out of 10 recommend Bayer aspirin? 9 doctors out of 10 recommend Bayer aspirin. Now, when we hear a statement like that, we say, oh my God, 90% of doctors recommend Bayer aspirin. That's your conclusion. So your mind takes that number, 9 out of 10, 90% of doctors. Now, the statement has to be true. The people that make Bayer aspirin and the people that are advertising and putting that out on the airwaves or printing that in your newspapers and news magazines have to be telling you the truth. So here's the way they do that. They go out and find 9 doctors and they say, well, what do you recommend? And these 9 doctors recommend, you know, anything that they want to, you know. And so, would you recommend Bayer aspirin for $1,000? Now, is this bribery? I don't know. The question is, would you recommend Bayer aspirin for $1,000? I think most doctors would say, well, sure, I would recommend Bayer aspirin for $1,000. And so the Bayer people or whoever's running this ad pays the doctor $1,000 and says, now we want you to sign this agreement that you recommend Bayer aspirin. And so, if the AG's office, you know, like Elliot Spitzer, you know, ever comes down on Bayer and says, wait a minute, where did you get these 9 doctors? They will go to those 9 doctors, and those 9 doctors have all signed affidavits that says, we recommend Bayer aspirin. So the Bayer company can say, 9 doctors out of 10 recommend Bayer aspirin. That's the truth! what they didn't tell you is, well, we didn't research to find out if 90% of the doctors in America recommend bare aspirin, but we found 9 doctors out of 10 that do. Let you draw your own conclusions, and your conclusion is going to be 90% of doctors in America, or probably worldwide, recommend bare aspirin. That's not true. Now, what's happening here is that they simply go over here and they hire a perjured witness. They go to a veterinarian, and this veterinarian may not even be a lion. He may be committing a constructive fraud. He may actually believe the BS that he's selling. But boys and girls, I would contend that one doctor of veterinarian medicine who says that pasteurized milk is not harmful to you and is just as good as raw milk is either uninformed or a damn liar, one or the other. Uninformed or a damn liar. Now, if he was a plumber, he'd just be uninformed. I mean, we wouldn't expect a plumber to know that, but we would certainly expect a doctor of veterinarian medicine. Now, a medical doctor might make that statement, and we'd say he's uninformed, not a vet. You see, veterinarians, they go to school and they learn a little different twist on medicine. And the twist on medicine is nutrition. Doctors of DVMs, you know, vets, they're trained in nutrition. They know that when an animal doesn't have the right minerals, he develops symptoms. And that the solution is what I reported to you from Joel Wallach, who said, what you do is you go down to the local feed store and you buy a 50-pound block of mineral, and you put it on the dining room table. And every time you walk by it, you know, you have the wife and the husband and the kids, every time you walk by the dining room table, you just reach over and lick on it, a couple of licks, and then go about your business. Every time you go through the dining room and you pass the table, take a lick off of the salt lick, and you can just about eliminate disease. That's what we do with cattle. We don't give cattle shots of insulin for their diabetes, boys and girls. We give them a salt lick down here so that we can keep their body in perfect harmony and their nutrition levels so that their immune systems keep them in perfect health. Now, if you don't have a salt lick and you have open pastures or free-range pastures so that they can get to all of the herbs, if they can get to all of the trees, all of the weeds, bushes, those animals will eat whatever it is that they need. Whatever they're short, they'll go eat it. Well, going on, this Dr. Henry raises the specter in his letter of the host of diseases that one may contract if one drinks raw certified milk. And he states, the consuming public can be guaranteed that the milk they're purchasing, if pasteurized, is free of disease-causing microorganisms such as brucellosis, tuberculosis, typhoid fever, salmonellas, shigellosis, Q fever, just to name a few. And some of these diseases, such as Q fever and brucellosis, never did come from contaminated milk. So I'm gonna point that out, that when these guys point out that those two diseases come from milk, they don't. When consuming raw milk, he continued, who can be absolutely sure that it is free of the foregoing microorganisms? These are diseases that can kill, and some people want to allow use of raw milk, all in the name of freedom of choice. Even with all the testing of both cows and milk, people who drink raw milk are exposing themselves to potential life-threatening diseases. Okay, now this is one of the monopolists, and he says that he wants to protect me. He's like George Bush. You know, he says, I'm here to protect the American people. Whether we want his protection or not, we're going to get it. Now, to this man, with all due respect, sir, would it be all right with you if I drank my raw milk and let me take the chance? Could I do that? Now somebody's going to say, yeah, but you're going to feed it to your kids, and then your kids are going to get sick. Would that be all right with you if I did that? And you're going to say, no, that's not all right. Okay, well, then you want to remember this. You want to remember this. If you want to take away my freedom to drink raw milk and feed it to my children, then you take away your own freedom, because social aid is indiscriminate. And when she comes to take my kids away from me because I feed them raw milk, she'll come and take your kids away from you because of something else that the state perceives as being inadequate on your part. You know, what goes around comes around. And when you want social lady over here to be the arbiter, social lady, when she owns your children, just comes and takes anybody's kids for whatever reason, whatever monopolist comes on the scene. Now, you can have your milk monopoly, and you can come and outlaw milk and say, Gordon, you're a damn criminal because you're feeding your kid raw milk. Some other monopolist can come along and say, hey, Bob, you're a criminal because you didn't shoot your kid up with snake venom and monkey pus and didn't get the right vaccines. Or some other monopolist can come along and say, hey, wait a minute. You're in violation of the law because you're whipping your kid. Or some other monopolist comes along and says, oh, you belong to some crazy cult. We're going to take your kids away from you. You know, if you want freedom of religion, and you want freedom of choice, and you want freedom of education, you want all these freedoms over here, you can't have social lady and 15 government agents breathing down your neck telling you how to live your life now, can you? So I'll tell you what, you let me be free to drink this bad milk, and I'll let you be free to join a cult. How's that? And then you can train your kids up in some cult if that's what you want to do, and I'll leave you alone. When consuming raw milk, he continued, who can be absolutely sure that it's free of the foregoing microorganisms? A little later on in the book, Douglas points out that there have been numerous, not one or two, but numerous outbreaks of diseases that come from pasteurized milk. And that's because, you see, if you pasteurize the milk and you screw up as you're progressing along the process, and it doesn't get pasteurized and you don't kill all of these organisms, remember, you're starting with dirty milk to start with. Boys and girls, when you're starting with dirty, contaminated milk to start with, it has to be processed. It has to be pasteurized. It's got to be pasteurized correctly. That's why the raw milk producers have to produce clean milk to start with. Well, if you produce clean milk to start with, there aren't any pathogens in it, so you don't need to pasteurize it. But God help us all if you've got dirty milk and you fail to pasteurize it properly, because now you're sending out the disease organisms to thousands of people. And that's what happens out of these big meatpacking plants with their hamburger. They get some E. coli 157H7 into the hamburger, and they send it out to 50 million people, and you have a big recall. You have a big salmonella or food poisoning outbreak. That's what industrialization of agriculture has brought us. Yeah, I'm about running out of time here. I'm going to put an arrow right here where it says on page 21, we're talking about utter destruction. This is the book by William Campbell Douglas. William Campbell Douglas, M.D., called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. Remember, if you want a copy of the book, go to Acres USA, and Acres got a telephone number here. The number is 512-892-4400. That's 512-892-4400. If they can't help you, then go to your local used bookstore. Tell them you want William Campbell Douglas's book on The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. It's pretty old. Goes back here 20, 30 years. A real dynamite book, very funny, very well written, very factual. And it'll tell you the story about raw and pasteurized milk. All right, we're about out of time. We'll have to wrap it up right about here. So let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour, an editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.